We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, September 17 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're kicking off live back at Pete's on Johnston on 1037 The Game. Ben Love, thrilled to be here at your favorite family sports grill. Pretty nice bar with a lot of specials, by the way, as well. We'll tell you more about that as we begin. The famous Clint D joining us in spirit and in person from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The full three-hour Monty for you today. Big guest going in on the Cajuns, LSU, the latest on Drew Brees and the Saints, and, of course, from 6 to 7, our second prep power hour of the 2019 season. Dane Chipanche and the undefeated Terlings Catholic Rebels will join me again. That begins at 6. Today, I'll begin a bit off topic, but I think it's an incredible topic for discussion. I've got a few thoughts on it. Earlier today, the 2020 Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame class was announced. Star-studded. 8 total names, men, women who have decorated this state with their talents, their exploits, and many of them were born here. Some of them plied their trade here. It's a good list. Former Raging Cajun at corner, Peanut Tillman. Joe Horn took out the cell phone, dialed in to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. The Saints wideout, Kerry Kittles, a New Orleans native who played at Villanova on the hardwood, then went to the New Jersey Nets, 8-year NBA career. Phil Robertson, quack, 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 Mr. Ducksworth, at Duck Commander. Angela Turner from La Tech. Sweet Lou Dunbar, the Harlem Globetrotters. Ronnie Coleman, 8-time Mr. Olympia world bodybuilding champ. At this point, you're wondering, Ben, what's the big deal? These names you've given so far, okay, yeah, Peanut Tillman, hey, that's big time. Joe Horn, I remember him. I haven't given you the 8th and final name, and that's the one I think that is attracting some very interesting conversation. Nicholas Lou Saban, 2002 through 04, LSU football head coach, is going to be your headliner as the current head coach at Alabama, set to be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in the summer of 2020. I do want to dive into some thoughts there. Sure, LSU's playing at Vandy. The Cajuns are playing at Ohio. Saints are moving on without Brees. We do have some important topics in state. But when it comes to the best of our state, how do you feel about Saban now being represented? Call me up. Let me know. We got some time in this opening segment. 706-0111. What I will tell you is this. There's never been a more important time in the history of LSU athletics than the period of time shared by Dr. Mark Emmert and Nick Saban. And the decisions that were made, right? The investment into so many things. I mean, the indoor facility, the student-athlete center, the investment into things that I think, frankly, look, the tail was clearly wagging the dog, right? For Saban to be able to go in and, by all accounts, kind of tell Emmert, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. This is what I need, and you're just going to follow me, maybe not blindly, but you're going to follow me. It took a heck of a pair of you-know-what to do that in that situation, but Saban set the LSU football program and subsequently the LSU athletic department, helped them charter a course that they're still on right now. And Emmert had the foresight to listen, and I don't want to put him in a complete Robin mode to the Batman that was Nick Saban. Certainly Emmert, now very much maligned as the head of the NC2A, had a lot of initiatives of his own. But the fact that Saban is who he is now in Tuscaloosa, in my opinion, shouldn't detract what he has meant, not just to LSU, but the state of Louisiana during his time helping to resurrect this football program. So I will tell you right off the bat, I think it's deserved. Again, I think the combination, the confluence, if you will, of Saban and Emmert, as influential as any pair in this state maybe ever, maybe even more so than Breeze and Peyton. We could probably debate that one as well. But I do think it's incredibly interesting. And he'll go in, Saban will, a year after Miles. And so somewhere in there, there's probably a joke to be made about Miles beating Saban for the first time in a hot minute. But I think both men deserve to be in. I think that they are two of the best three coaches that LSU football's ever had. Charlie McClendon being in that trio as well, if we were doing a Mount Rushmore. But it's fascinating. And one of my favorite lines that Ruffin Rodgery kind of, you know, I guess trots out of the barn pretty often when he joins us on the program is he knows there's a guy in Tuscaloosa that in a lot of ways wishes he was still in Baton Rouge. Heck, for that matter, Scott Woodward said it very publicly within the last month in Baton Rouge. So, yeah, we got a lot of live bullets flying. It's football season. Certainly a lot of matters that we're all interested in, not just LSU, UL, the Saints, the prep game. OBJ and Cleveland got out the schneid last night, and somewhat interesting Monday night football game. But I think this is as intriguing as it gets. Maybe the biggest nemesis the state of Louisiana has ever known from a sporting perspective, but of course once helped to build something that everybody else could stand on the shoulders of giants, if you will. And the other thing that occurred to me is this. The timing is interesting, right? Because what an unbelievable recruiting platform this provides. The head coach of Alabama to come in and say, well, you know, look, happy to do this. The state of Louisiana has always been important to me. And then just go ahead and flash that $10 million smile to everybody. So I read this news today. And while I think it's incredibly deserved, it was at least relatively surprising, if not somewhat shocking, to me. And I did want to lead with it. We've got some more time in the program for you to weigh in, but I wanted to kind of initially give you some of my thoughts off the bat. Nick Saban going into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, class of 2020. What did he do? In the 5 years piloting the program, 48-16 overall record. 01, 03 SEC titles, and then the 04 BCS National Championship. So something I believe we'll be able to chop up for many hours and days into the future, but wanted to give you my two cents on it right now. On the other side of this break, I'm going to switch it up a little bit more. I want to talk about big news out of the Big Apple. Daniel Jones set to replace Eli Manning. We'll get your two cents on that as well. And then a dynamite guest list today. In 20 minutes, Nico Yanko with the Cajuns Athletic Department coming to sit in live at Pete's on Johnston. We'll talk about the start of the season for Billy Napier and company, this week's trip to Athens, Ohio, and what's next on the radar of Raging Cajuns Athletics. At 5:05, we begin the first of two legs with Shea Dixon, go247.com. First, it'll be the Cruton, a little bit of LSU team talk, and then we'll get in to flip the script where just about anything can happen. Beginning at 5:15, and already I mentioned it, it bears repeating. Dane Chipanche and the Turnleys Catholic Rebels will join me from 6 until 7 p.m. Rebels are 2-0 after dusting off Como and Archbishop Hannon to begin their season. Excited to have the Rebels back. Coach Chipanche, Mike Boyer and company, they almost always pack this place out. The number to beat from Southside last week is 112. So, Turlings, come out and get it. We look forward to visiting with you. We'll be right back in. Time to talk about Eli, Daniel Jones, and the New York Giants. You're listening to Bumper Bumper Sports, and we'll bounce right back in to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, we've got one of those gridiron debates set to take place and perpetuate here as we're right back into Pete's on Johnston. Great interviews coming up in less than 15 minutes. Nico Yanko will join me to talk Raging Cajun sports. Shay Dixon at 5:05, and the Rebels come running in from Turnley's Catholic at 6 o'clock. But right about now, hey, we do it every day in the 4 o'clock hour. It starts with the music, then I'll get to my question. Big news today out of New York City. Daniel Jones, the number 6 pick in the draft by the Giants out of Duke, he's been named the starting quarterback. And that means after 15 years of starting, Eli Manning will take a seat. I vividly remember when Eli was coming into almost an identical situation, right? Kurt Warner was taking the realm in the Big Apple, and now the worm has turned, and it's time for a new generation to begin, or at least chance. And it's always interesting how these things play out, whether it's Eli entering the league. I think we watched a really fascinating case study last year. Lamar Jackson comes in and kind of sort of eventually puts Joe Flacco to the bench. Injury certainly assisted in that regard. We've seen Aaron Rodgers coming in, having to learn and then wait and wait and wait some more, with Brett Favre leading the pack back in the day. So there are a lot of ways that this can be done. Your sink or swim question of the day: are the New York Giants making the right decision now? Call us up and let us know. 706-0111. This is certainly your big story nationwide on a Tuesday. CD, I want you to go first.
For me, Ben, I'm going without a doubt it's a swim. It feels like it's almost overdue to a certain extent, because you think about what's happened with Eli Manning's kind of tenure with the New York Giants, especially the last couple of years. It feels like maybe it was a little bit overdue, but now Eli Manning, he's on the bench. At least give Daniel Jones a chance. You invested a top 10 pick in the guy, why not give him a shot?
The fact that they're playing the Bucks this week makes it pretty decent timing, right, on the competition front. The idea that they started off as poorly as they have, no real, I guess, discernible thought about the playoffs or even maybe some kind of redemption this season. And, I don't know, getting towards 6 or 7 wins feels like an unreachable plateau as well. So, yes, if there's going to be a lost season, I don't mind seeing what he can do. And I think you want to know what he can do with a full week's worth of starters reps. And just that confidence of knowing it's my show. Now, what I'll tell you is this. Eli Manning, as you probably would expect, has handled it. We overuse this phrase, but he's handled it with aplomb. He's been awesome. He's ready to assist in any way that he can. And again, there's no easy way for this kind of changing of the guard. Clint, I'm also going to swim here, but I do it cautiously. Because the other thing I know is this. They've been trying to make this move in New York for quite some time. And it's even, I guess, now leapt over from one general manager to another. But Eli has been sat down. That went over like a lead balloon with much of the fan base. And, you know, that might be the other thing that I would mention. Through all those examples I just gave you, I don't know that the Favre-Rodgers example certainly isn't the prototype, right? Usually, nobody sits and waits that long, and no franchise makes somebody sit and wait that long. We've even seen recently where the Patriots have gotten rid of Jimmy Garoppolo because they weren't going to wait that long. Some insinuating that TB12 kind of heard the footsteps, didn't like that either, but for whatever reason, yeah, they shipped him out to the West Coast and from the AFC to the NFC to play for the 49ers. This one feels a little different, and it might be closest to Joe Flacco, considering that Flacco won a Super Bowl, but I would argue that Eli has been more instrumental to the Giants' success than Joe Flacco was to the Baltimore Ravens. But still, that's a bit of what we're seeing going on. The other difference, Flacco was injured last year. There was an opening and a window for Lamar Jackson to come in and do his thing. And now we see how Lamar has started off this 2019 campaign. No real injury to Eli. Now, I'll tell you this, Clint. Part of the reason that I'm swimming with a lot of caution, Not that I give two rips about the New York Giants, but it's a pretty darn big storyline. I swim cautiously because I don't know that anybody's going to thrive by that offensive line right now. I think if that team had the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, Eli may well be the starter for the next 2 years. So it could take that much off of somebody's career. Not unlike what this Saints offensive line, especially the recent resurgence with Ryan Ramczyk out at right tackle, it absolutely has helped to extend the shelf life of Drew Brees, current injury notwithstanding. And so we're seeing, look, the torch is being passed. I don't know that I would say it's being passed willingly from Eli to Daniel Jones, but certainly there is nothing but class that's coming out of the mouth of the former Ole Miss Rebel. We got time for your thoughts on this subject. 706-0111. All kinds of turnover at the quarterback position in the league right now. And whether it's injury, whether it's a benching, as we're seeing right now, consider the fact that Ben Roethlisberger, Super Bowl winner, Eli Manning, Super Bowl winner, Drew Brees, Super Bowl winner, all guys that have been mainstays in the league for the last 10-plus years are taking a seat right now. And so it's kind of a strange time. I think when you look at the quarterback position in the league, even, heck, for that matter, even Nick Foles, Super Bowl winner, gets shipped off to Jacksonville, and now he got put on his backside real early. Gardner Minshew, come on down. And so we always talk on this program, and I think in sports conversations all over the country, about the lack of quality quarterback play. And typically we're talking about backups. And we all kind of believe that the Saints have one of the more quality backups in the NFL. After all, Teddy Bridgewater in the last five seasons has made a Pro Bowl on his own merit. And so you like to think that puts him in the upper echelon of second QBs up. And kind of following in the footsteps of what Philly did with Foles backing up Wentz, that worked out well. And so a couple seasons ago, to back up Breeze, the Saints found Bridgewater. Now I think there are maybe more questions than answers about how he'll perform as the guy when you have to break the glass in case of emergency. So just a lot to consider about the quarterback position. And maybe it's not just the backups and the depth that you can question when it comes to quarterbacks. At this point, I think for a lot of teams and a lot of teams that are fairly storied, I think it's the starters as well. Again, happy to take your phone calls, but we have a moment now. And while things might feel ugly in the Big Easy, a reminder, we've got an ugly furniture contest going on. So if you have an ugly recliner at the house, I guess at the office as well, it might just be time for you to upgrade. 103.7 The Game and Bordelon's Home Furnishings want to give you a chance to win a brand new recliner. Just submit a photo of your ugly recliner at 1037thegame.com. Tell us why we should choose you to win. We're going to pick the best five photos, and then we'll let our listeners vote for the winner. The winner will receive a $600 gift certificate to Bordelon's Home Furnishings. Again, learn more at the website 1037thegame.com. CD, I don't know about you. It's been a hot minute since I've thrown out some ugly furniture. Are you still rocking 5-plus-year-old furniture, or are you just all new in the Domang household?
Oh, it's definitely some 5-plus-year-old stuff inside the Domang household. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I don't know if I agree with that motto when it comes to furniture. I mean, literally, I guess if it's not broke, falling apart, and you can still operate the lever that reclines, yeah, there's something to be said for that. But there might be plenty of reasons for sports fans out there to fix it, even though it's not broke, right? Because after all, it could still be torn. It could still be, you know, it could reek. Not that any of you sports fans out there have smelly furniture. I'm just going to, you know, throw a dart in the dark and say that it's not an impossible thought. Some pretty cool stuff going on at the website, 1037thegame.com. Definitely a lot going on when it comes to Raging Cajuns athletics and football. UL off to a 2-1 start in year 2 under Billy Napier. Expected to sit down with Nico Yanko, Deputy Director of Athletics for the Cajuns. That'll be within the next 5 minutes, as we should have him live at Pete's on Johnston. Hey, my text just came through from my main man, Shay Dixon. He'll be with us at 5:05. First to Cruton and a little LSU. Then we flip the script, and the Rebels come running in from Terling's Catholic. It's their prep power hour from 6 until 7. So stay with us. Plenty more show to go on a Tuesday. You are listening to Bumper Sports, still live and having fun at Pete's on Johnston on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back out to Pete's on Johnston. A lot of show to go. We'll get back into some Saints talk, right? What's the latest with Drew Brees? LSU football gearing up for a trip to Vandy. Celebrate the Terling's Catholic Rebels. Dane Chiponche and company coming in from 6 until 7. But right now, let's do a deep dive on Raging Cajuns Athletics. Joining me, Deputy Athletics Director for UL, Nico Yanko. Hey, it's great to have you here, my friend. How are you today?
Always fun to join in, Ben. Thanks for having me.
So, a pretty unforgettable experience in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. A really competitive game against not only a Power 5 team, but a team that's been pretty good in the SEC lately, in Mississippi State. Follow that with two straight wins, both at home. I guess your take on a whirlwind start to the season.
You know, we're having a lot of fun, and compliments to the student-athletes, Coach Napier, his staff. You know, another group we want to certainly recognize and acknowledge right now is our fans that have shown up. We've had some pretty hot game days, you know. Now, you know, outside of the dome, obviously it was kind of chilly that day, but we've seen definitely a super competitive team on the field of play, and I think our fan base that is showing up right now is certainly having a great time. Thank you to our students that are coming out in full force. You know, we've almost tripled our attendance from the students by moving that student tailgate back, which we're only going to continue to find unique ways to roll out some great experiences there for them. So we're pumped up so far. You know, I think our team, again, they're in a great shape right now and positioned well to go up and, you know, hopefully take on a great and a competitive Ohio team. So we're excited about to take wheels and, you know, lift wheels up on Friday and head into Columbus where we'll stay. And then from there we'll head down to Athens on Saturday morning and hopefully kick off against another good opponent.
I guess as you and the athletic department have taken the pulse right now, the fan base, the students as well, what has the feedback been from these first couple of home games, the game day experience? You mentioned moving the tailgate, the student section, all of it.
Hot for the first one. So I know we're all looking forward to getting back here on October 9th against Appalachian State, which is going to be a fun one for us. You know, being able to have a midweek game, great opportunity to get on national TV and some great national exposure. You know, a couple things, you know, the student tailgate has been very well received. You know, we're always trying to find unique ways to grow that, engage with other arms of our campus to make sure that everybody's having a great experience. To complement a part of that is some of our student leaders. Even met with some folks yesterday about how we can continue to educate and market that to our student population, because we really believe that a lot of the traditions start there. Same with a lot of the energy during the game start there. So we've been really excited about that, particularly with how that's rolled out in concert with our new student supporters organization, which is dedicated for athletic participation at games and events. You know, from the general fans, you know, I think this past weekend we might have had maybe one or two issues that will get cleaned up in the parking lots. I think we had a gate issue shut down just for some state safety precautions with ULPD. But other than that, pretty well, you know, game day experience so far from everybody. We're seeing more and more tailgaters out there, which is that's a very good thing to see, very positive experience in game. You know, I think we've constantly tried to add and enhance different things from wayfinding signage, but let's, you know, not forget the $1 hot dogs and the $2 beers.
They have not been forgotten in the Love household.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we continue to set records here for hot dogs sold on game day. So our concession vendor, Sodexo, has done a good job there. You know, there's always little things that we can tweak and enhance, whether it be how can we efficiently set up our RCF fast pass signs, or how we can continue to make sure the monitors have appropriate information for everybody to understand what's at those stands. But overall, really, really enjoyable experience so far. And I've gotten more positive feedback this year than the previous two seasons, which we've constantly tried to add new elements. So that's a really good sign, and we're grateful for our fans to show up. And, you know, here's a charge again. Let's get back out there on October 9 because we got a pretty competitive team coming to town, and we've got a lot of promotions rolling out for that game too because, again, that's a chance to get on national television for us to really showcase what the Raging Cajuns are made of. And that's everybody from our student athletes, coaches, and our fans. And as we know, we tailgate down here, and we tailgate to win.
Talking Cajuns athletics, Nico Yanko, good enough to join us live at Pete's on Johnston. How do you, Brian Maggard, and everybody view that? The opportunity to get on national TV, take the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday game, if you will, versus maybe another home game on a weekend. Is it something that always kind of is in your favor to go to the weekday, or is it case by case?
It's kind of hard to say, you know, case by case, because, you know, any chance you get to get your football team on national television, that's a four hour infomercial for your university. And, you know, the cool thing to say, and I'm trying to be, I guess, not too arrogant when I say this, but they don't put bad teams on TV during the week, you know. So that's a compliment to everything we have going on, and people like to, and they know that our fans will show up for those opportunities. But are Wednesdays ideal for families and everybody to get out there? No. So there's a balance to it. So to answer that one way or the other, it's case by case, I guess you would say. But, you know, you can't certainly shy away from those opportunities to play on a linear network channel, particularly on Wednesday night for us this year, is pretty unique because, you know, Thursdays and Fridays you're always competing with either high school or NFL games. So Wednesday, I mean, we're probably the only show on that night outside of a few other events. So this is going to be a really good opportunity for us. And then, you know, we have a few more televised events throughout the year too, when we look at our Arkansas State game and our Coastal Carolina game. So these are good opportunities for us to get out there and put the Raging Cajun brand into, you know, millions of households.
Football, obviously, the order of the day, but we don't forget about some of the other popular sports on campus. I guess as you continue to watch Matt Deggs make his mark on this storied baseball program, especially following the footsteps of a man he loved dearly in Tony Robichaud, what have you seen?
A great, fierce competitor. That guy is dialed in. You know, he knows what he wants to do. He's not shy about letting you know it either, and that's been pretty cool to see. You know, certainly he has utmost respect for Coach Robichaud and has some great stories there and great lessons that Robe taught him, as well as many of us. You know, I really you miss that guy. But he's put a really good staff together in retaining, you know, Coach Babineau all the way to, you know, the whole crew there in retaining Jake Wells. And what we have going on for that program is constantly building new momentum and fresh momentum and getting some things really energized in that locker room. At the same time, reflecting on all the great things that Tony Robichaud put as the foundation of that program. And I appreciate how Coach Deggs addresses it. Is, you know, he's the next guy to carry the torch. And that's a pretty cool way to see how the leadership transition has happened with that baseball program. But we're excited about it. You know, we'll start rolling out our baseball renewals here within the next 2 weeks. You'll see that get out there. So we're anticipating a pretty fun season this year. And same with softball. And, you know, those diamond sports down here in South Louisiana, we love them, right?
You know, you think about sometimes, or at least fans maybe do in the media as well, we think about, okay, Power Five programs, Group of Five programs. As you bridge the gap between the two, I mean, just how important are the resources when you try to add to things, not just the facilities, but paying for top-dollar coaches, maybe doing some things, frankly, that some of your peers can't? I mean, what's that process like as you and Dr. Maggard continue to embark upon it?
It's a great team effort. You know, it starts at the top with Dr. Savoie, you know, the Board of Supervisors, all the way down to, obviously, with Brian's vision and leadership for this athletic department and, you know, a lot of members on our team. That's a fun thing to see, is making sure that we're balancing those resources, but understanding that, you know, football certainly is the cash cow and allows you to present other opportunities to the rest of your sport programs. So we're always trying to continue to find unique ways, whether that be what we've invested in our digital strategy team, you know, getting out and about. You know, that's as much about ticket sales as it is about recruiting, right? We're going to constantly focus on getting better there and how we communicate and showcase the brand. You know, certainly with the cost of attendance checks, I mean, those are certainly a recruiting edge that benefits every single one of our sport programs. And each of our scholarship student athletes get an opportunity to take advantage of that as well. All the way to our facilities. You know, our facilities around here are you know, top notch. Now, we know that the next step of this is we're going to need to address Cajun Field at some point. And there's some other elements that need to be enhanced. But all that stuff will get addressed as Brian gets prepared to update everybody on those next steps and his vision for the athletic department footprint, if you will. So there's a lot of balance to that. But at the same time, you know, I think we're doing the right things of of really investing into the football program to get us very competitive, because that can certainly help support so many of our sport programs and a lot of our head coaches. That, you know, you got to compliment those folks right there, because we got a great group of them right now, and we're so excited that they're all on the same page and really driving forward this vision that Brian has set forth for us all to execute.
Wrapping up with Nick Oyanko, Deputy Athletics Director for the Raging Cajuns. I think a lot of schools in college football had the race to 100,000 seats, and now a lot of them are certainly thinking about scaling back down and making it more about quality. As you relate that to upcoming Cajun field renovations, how do you kind of, I guess, weigh that, right? The numbers versus the quality of experience inside of your facility.
You know, right now what you're focusing on is constantly trying to entertain and engage multiple demographics of your fan base. You know, that might be the person who wants the headsets sitting on the 50, you know, no one bother him, no one touch him, to the student who wants something interactive, engaging all the time, maybe something more involved with your cell phone or the music and the social atmosphere, to the kids that want to jump in the bounce house. So I think it's about creating a lot of different quality experiences within that venue, but at the same time, allowing that to be orchestrated to have a great vibe and create a wonderful experience for everybody who can come out to those games and have a great experience at the end of the day. So it's a little bit of everything, I guess I would say.
Sure.
But certainly the quality of experience is going to be important. I think for our folks down here, they're always looking for a family-friendly opportunity, which I think we presented within the limitations of the current Cajun Field structure. But I think those are a lot of things to be addressed when we start talking about those next steps there, you know, at the right time.
Nico, your presence has prompted a call in already. George Reed has called into the program, doesn't want to go on air, but wants to shout out the Cajuns football team for racking up 1,000 yards on the ground three games. It's pretty potent.
How about that? George, you're right on, my man. We've been potent on the ground. I think we've been we've gotten more efficient in the air. You know, I think your offense certainly has done a really good job. I think our defense has definitely improved over the past couple games. You know, special teams. You know, I'm a big believer in all three phases of the football game: when you win your games and win your championships. But even on special teams, I think we've got more efficient. But I mean, when you're putting up 77 points, I don't care who you're playing, that's hard to do.
That could be tough on air.
So that's an impressive deal. And then obviously beating up on Liberty. And I think we played well against Mississippi State. But, man, you got a running game right now that's just top-notch. And I know those guys are hungry. And honestly, the fun thing to see, it like we saw on Saturday, you got two guys behind those three that are even as impressive as I've seen coming out of the backfield. And Levi's leadership and command of that offense has been, he's done a really good job of growing into a great leadership role. And you look at the weapons outside, I mean, you got, you know, Bam out there. You got some great receivers that are hungry, but also know their role. You know, you're only going to get the ball so many times in a game thrown to you, right? But those guys are out there blocking 20 yards downfield. That tells you something about what this team's made up of. And I think those compliments, again, go back to Coach Napier, that staff, and those senior leaders on that team.
Plenty of highlights from Saturday night. I would also throw in the Texas Southern Band and drumline at halftime. Anybody who left their seats to do whatever they wanted to do instead of that probably made a mistake. That was incredible.
The Ocean of Soul, they showed up to perform. But no, you know, we were grateful for them making that trip over from their area in Texas. You know, and then, you know, for this next game, you know, what we're looking for this Appalachian State game on October 9th is an opportunity for folks to see Wayne Toops under the oak tree.
There you go.
And then our Pride of Acadiana band is getting excited to do a performance on the field there as well, reflecting on a lot of the culture that comes with the Festival Acadiana de Creole. So we're going to have more or less a kickoff celebration, if you will, at halftime.
You're saying that like a seasoned veteran, by the way.
Come on, man. Okay. Going into year three here. What? We're having fun. This is a lot of fun for us. So we're getting down there on the field with our band, with Wayne Toops. We're going to have a lot of fun. The addition to that game experience is we're going to start inviting folks to register to sign up to Cajun Dance on Cajun Field at halftime on national TV. So you get a chance to reflect and showcase everything we're doing down here, from our family-friendly experience to our unique and a true identifiable culture of South Louisiana on national TV. And we're going to have some Cajun dancing and some fun that night. You can't beat it. So we're really pumped up to see how that performance goes, as well as some other promotions like Ladies Night. We'll have a $7 ticket promotion that's available now. That's at the box office. Fees may apply online. Along with all of our other game day programs and unique promotions as well.
Always fun to catch up. Thanks for coming in live to Pete's.
Thanks, Ben.
Nico Yanko. There it is. And we'll be right back in. Time to finish up hour number one. How about a little Saints sound and an update on Drew Brees? This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
This is Steve Sparks with the Houston Astros Radio Network, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's Dodge Power Dollars time at Mush and Patu. $9,000 off MSRP on a 20... 20-
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield. But it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Plenty of energy from our previous guest, Nico Yanko. We appreciate him coming down. Look, it's really simple. I mean, you get called down to the mat, you get to do an interview with yours truly. You got to come out and patronize the great places that we are. And for the next handful of Tuesdays, that'll be Pete's on Johnston. Don't forget Shade Dixon coming aboard in about 12 minutes. And then Dane Chipanche and the Turlings Catholic Rebels. It's their prep power hour from 6 to 7. Excited to have the Rebels back in house. We do want to get you the latest on Drew Brees surgery tomorrow. Does that change at all the timeline? Can't imagine so. Minimum of 6 weeks, maybe best case scenario, he's playing in the home game, the first of two contests against the Falcons. But this one, to begin the month of November and right after the Saints' bye week. And so that still looms as the best possible scenario. But surgery tomorrow from Brees, nothing really else new on that front. But we do want you to hear from Sean Payton, head coach of the Saints, starting to lend some credence about what he thought after watching film and dissecting the game tape of Saints at Rams minus Drewby. And we'll get to that right now. His observations, go.
I thought we played real well defensively, particularly in the first half. Got away from us later in the fourth quarter, but, you know, it was the type of game I felt that was necessary for us to play, and you know, it was low scoring. Offensively, I didn't think we played particularly well up front. I think the penalties were a factor yesterday, just the amount. It negated three different games of more than 15 yards. So that's something we got to clean up on, and obviously quickly.
And I understand where he's coming from. He's not going to be a guy that just points at a replacement at quarterback, right? And having to fill in for your biggest cog. He'll never do that. Instead, what a guy like Payton, or anybody smart in that position is going to do, is figure out how to support everything around Bridgewater and Hill. How do you cut down on the penalties, ramp up the run game, continue to be opportunistic on defense, garner takeaways, special teams excellence? How can I rig it, basically, to where my quarterback can just function within the offense and not have to go out there and win every single game on his own? Because we all know, as much as the goal has been to take some of the burden off of Drew over the last two-plus seasons, now that you have injected Kamara, Thomas, Ramchek, Cook, Ginn, Traquan, some talented offensive pieces, you've given some support to Cam Jordan, Marcus Davenport, Demario Davis. I think clearly it's a better all-around team. How can you lean on that? I believe that is exactly the place that Payton is in now. And as he tells you here, well, you also lean on leadership.
Well, look, I think you focus on the things you can control. And I think that, you know, this is where you lean on leadership and you get ready to, you know, have a good week of practice. It's kind of the nature of our life sometimes. You know, you come in on a Monday, you got a handful of things you're having to address, and that's part of the deal.
And so you have to lean on leadership, lean on maybe some aspects outside of the quarterback position. That said, there's no doubt. If the Saints are going to win one of the next two games, and that
it won't be their stated mission, but I'll tell you on this show, it's mine. I think if the Saints can come out of the next two games, Splitsville at 1-1, putting them at 2-2 on the season, they're going to be in good shape. And confidence taken away from beating either Seattle at the home of the 12th man or the Cowboys, looking right now like one of the best two or three teams in the NFC at home, you take one of those two games, and then I think suddenly, Clint, our sink or swim question from yesterday, how many out of the next six can the Saints win? Look, they win one of these next two, I think they're closer to going 4-2. And boy, would that put this team in a great position for once Breeze returns. But a big contest coming up this Sunday afternoon against the Seattle Seahawks. All right, we've got a three-hour show for you today. We're almost at the bottom of the barrel for hour number one. Let's wrap it up, as we always do, with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Prolific. We started the program with a laundry list of the eight men and women who are entering the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I think the big headliner, Nick Saban, but prolific that Charles Peanut Tillman, a Bears Pro Bowler, a guy who won a Super Bowl, right? Now he's got an opportunity to go in, not just to the Raging Cajuns Hall of Fame, but the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. That is big time stuff. And so Peanut Tillman for the Cajuns, extraordinarily prolific and now doing some things in life after football that are pretty darn impressive as well. All right, 1 hour down. We have two more to go. Shade Dixon hopping aboard less than 10 minutes from this moment. Don't go anywhere. Bumper to Bumper Sports will return to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now
let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 1037 The Game, hanging out this Tuesday, like last Tuesday, and the next handful at Pete's on Johnston. Why are we here? Well, we like it here. The food's fantastic. They've got happy hour from 11 to 6, so come join me in the next 56 minutes and change. And especially because we're going to have another prep power hour from 6 until 7 p.m. Dane Chaponche and the undefeated Terlings Catholic Rebels going to come rolling in after practice. Excited to talk to Coach Chaponche, his players, the assistant coaches. Again, that's coming your way in less than an hour from right now. Big news of the day on the Saints front, Drew Brees will have surgery tomorrow to repair the torn ligament in his throwing hand thumb. No real update on his timetable. I would imagine 6 to 8 weeks. That still holds true. Another Super Bowl winning quarterback is going to be out, but this has nothing to do with injury. Announced earlier today by the franchise, Daniel Jones, the sixth overall pick from Duke, is going to take over from Eli Manning as the starting quarterback for the New York Football Giants. So never a dull moment at any level of football. And Tuesdays in the 5 o'clock hour, hey, we don't have to worry about dull because we got this guy coming aboard. All I can say, it's time to bring him out.
Bring him out, bring him out, bring him out.
It's time for Shay Dixon of Go 247.
Shay, as always, a pleasure. LSU snoozes through a quarter of play against Northwestern State, then turns on the afterburners. That sets us up with a trip to Nashville, a place that you, I know, hold high esteem for. So great to have you in. It's a great time to talk some LSU football.
Oh, I love it. Happy to be here. 3-0. Tuesday is my favorite day of the week with the good people of the Acadiana area. So, yeah, let's rock it.
We're going to talk some Cruton, little LSU team action in his opening segment as well, while it's still my turn to ask the questions. And I know that Coach O recently said, Shay, that skill players are blowing up his phone nonstop. What's the latest you could share there with our listeners?
Yeah, he had a good sound bit, almost a Les Miles type moment where he pretended to dial his phone or text on his phone, hey, call me to a recruit. And he said if it's an offensive skill player, beforehand he would say, hey, call me, and never heard anything. And now after 3 weeks, hey, call me, before I even finish texting, my phone's ringing. So I think he's being honest, because I've talked to a number of kids in this class, in future classes, and they are impressed. Look, when your offense is the most efficient in the country right now, I mean, completing more than 80% of the passes, when your quarterback's a Heisman front runner, when your three receivers all are up there in the top four or five in the SEC in touchdowns and yards, basically, to sum it up, this is how I saw it, Ben, on Sunday, when the only other team out there that's throwing it at the clip you are is Mike Leach in Washington State, you're all of a sudden doing some things that are going to attract some big names. They've never had trouble getting these marquee receivers, but I think one thing we have to remember, they were always from Louisiana, and they branched out in this class in the offseason, landed Rakim Jarrett out of the East Coast, Washington, D.C., Jermaine Burton on the West Coast in California, obviously Kayshawn Boutte in Westgate, and Coy Moore over at Rummel. So you've kind of got a 50-50 split there of kids from very far away and some local kids, and normally we don't see that kind of mix, and it may not have held on had they not come out and delivered on their promise. And as Orgeron said, look, we promised all offseason this is what the offense would look like. It's probably exceeded those expectations and promises. And because of that, he's got kids blowing him up left and right. And look, I know they've got 23 commits for this class, so there's not much more to go here. And they're not really heavy on skill players the rest of the way. But I would look at these juniors in high school, the sophomores. Those are the kind of guys that are taking their first real look at recruiting. And it's quite obvious that they're liking what LSU's putting on the field.
Another player who I think certainly fits that description, Tykeus Crawford, an offensive tackle. And on the other side of the football, Donnell Harris, an edge rusher, both at this last game. I guess what might you tell us at this point on that push that LSU's making for a guy on either side of the line?
Yeah, both sides of the line there. They want to finish with an edge rusher and a Kalevon Chaisson type, right? Like a stand-up outside linebacker who can really get after the passer. And Donnell Harris fits that bill. And he had been committed to Miami, and he was a junior. And then he reclassified. He said, I'm going to have enough credits to graduate. I'll go ahead and basically skip a grade. He pulled the old skip a grade, reclassified. More of a basketball thing than a football thing, I feel like. But he's now in the 2020 class. That makes him a top target the rest of the way. And he had told me, look, I've never been to a game there. I've talked to the coaches. They've sold me on all this stuff, but I don't even know what Baton Rouge looks like. He came over with his parents. He had a very good time. I mean, he gave it great reviews. He said it's the best trip he's ever been on. Like I said, he was committed to Miami. He had been heavy on A&M and had visited there, but he catapults LSU ahead of those teams. And now with an official visit still in store, meaning he can come back again with his parents, and he will, I think you got to call LSU the team to beat there. Good news, considering that's one of the spots they want to fill the few remaining with. And then, yes, Tykeus Crawford out of Arkansas, committed to Arkansas, but is a massive offensive tackle. He camped at LSU this summer. He was probably the best offensive lineman of the current crop, you know, the rising seniors over the summer that I saw at LSU's camp. And now I think if you've got two programs sort of going in different directions, right, I don't think Arkansas's set the world on fire this year with Chad Morris and company, and quite clearly LSU is. They need offensive tackles. They only have one offensive lineman remaining. My dogs even agree, Ben. Get some offensive tackles is what they're saying. They've got to find one. Look, Marlon Martinez is their only O-line commit. That's one kid. You've got three or four spots remaining, maybe. I think it's quite evident that you need one or two guys that can play out on the end for you. And I think whether it's Tykeus Crawford, Marcus Dumervile, you're going to hear me keep repeating these names all the way until December, because they've got to figure out a way to kind of beef up the O-line. That's one position, and I think there's a few of them, but you can't just take one O-lineman in a class. They're obviously going to have to get more.
Not the first nor the last time, Shay, that dogs will make an appearance on this program. Everybody gets excited when LSU starts playing offense a little differently, and your dog's no exception. All right, one more. And this is a bit of a fusion question between Cruton and the guys we're now starting to see on the field. Obviously, Derek Stingley Jr., a couple of other freshmen have made an early splash. In your estimation, who else starts playing more as this season goes on for the new group of signees?
That's a good one. I mean, I think it's evident they want John Emery and Ty Davis Price to play more. And I was talking this week to Clyde Edwards-Helaire about it, and he kind of said, look, you saw in the Texas game, it was just me, and I was a freshman once. I came from Catholic High, and I knew some stuff, but I didn't know everything. And when you get out there, and as he put it, put an 18-year-old out there, you know, in his second game, and tell him to go block Caleb on Chase on. Tell him to go block whoever you're having to go against on Texas's defense. And as Clyde said, it's not happening. I don't care what you're the number one running back in the country or number 500 running back. You're not going to be able to do it. So I think that we see them try to catch those guys up to speed more and more. Texas probably wasn't the time for it, but we saw them get action there at the back end of the last game against Northwestern State. I think they probably would have wanted to play them a little bit more, but it took them a bit to get kind of that extended lead. So I'll circle them. I have to say Trey Palmer, right? I mean, I know that they've got three receivers, and they've got even more than that behind him that are older, or beyond those three that are older, but he looks really good with the ball in his hands on punt returns, and not that Derek Stingley doesn't, but I think it's evident that Trey Palmer, who was banged up a little bit in camp, is now starting to turn that corner, get some more looks, playing some special teams. I like him for kind of down the stretch, and I look at this defense, and I think the answer might be Cordell Flott. He's been playing a good bit. We know that they need cornerbacks. You know, we've seen Fulton already get banged up a bit. He was banged up last year. And beyond him and Stingley, and you've got Kerry Vincent now with Todd Harris out as someone who can play safety or play nickel, but he's not going to be a boundary corner for you. And they signed this big old class, and it's evident that the kid out of Saraland coming from Bama, a one-time Auburn commit, flipped LSU, and now Flott looks like the real deal. And look, over time, he'll put on weight and do all that sort of stuff. But for what he is right now, an 18-year-old freshman a few games in, he's not Derek Stingley, but I think he's promising enough to where you're going to start to trust him a little bit more if you can get him out there in a couple more games.
Shay, as we hit a break, I want to update a story that I led off today's program with. Nick Saban is going to be one of the newest inductees into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. And how about this quote? Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser just put it out. Maybe you've seen it. If there was one thing professionally I would do over again, it would have been to not leave LSU. Oh, wow. And I don't think anybody ever denied that, but I'm surprised that that just came out of his mouth. Your 2 cents before he hit a break.
I did not hear that until you just put it into my ears. Interesting. Is that trolling? Is Saban doing a little trolling, or is he just being a nice guy? I don't know. I'm 50-50 there, but yes, it led to quite the failed NFL career, but I guess he worked out in Bama. Boy, I've got to let that sink in. I don't know. I'm going to maybe next Tuesday have to deliver a thought on that. That's coming right at me.
Yeah, that one may take 168 hours to marinate on, and I'll understand that. So I think it's the right move by the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. He absolutely deserves it. But that's an interesting quote from Nicholas Lou Saban. All right, quick recess, then school back in session. And Shay's going to be leading the charge on the playground. It's Flip the Script time when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back out to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we were?
We're going to do things different. We're going to flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shay Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip. Yes, I'll flip.
Welcome back out to Pete's on Johnston, and it is that time to turn the show over to Shay. Looking forward to your best here, brother. What you got for me?
Well, let's start here. I have a little fun, and you can take this however you want, but going to Nashville this weekend, right? Vandy, LSU Vandy, 2010, you and I were there. The last time LSU was up there, we had some fun. So I want to ask you this. Where does Vanderbilt, and really Nashville, and here's the question, combine the city and the atmosphere of the game and all that, so Vandy's getting docked a little points there, obviously, and give me your top four or five. What are the four or five best SEC road trips? Because I do think that LSU, with Vandy on tap, has one of them this year.
I'll tell you right now, Athens is on top. And if you're going to tell me it's Homer Radio, That's fine. I'll accept that. But the opportunity to stay in Atlanta, take a fairly short trip up Highway 316, visit the Classic City. I mean, triple-digit bars that literally abut campus right on Broad Street. It's a beautiful campus, size-wise, similar to LSU, but hillier, just picturesque. And the people there, especially if you're an LSU fan, I mean, there's no bitter rivalry. Just two fan bases that kind of like to get down. So, for me, I think Athens is at the tip-top, number one. I would put Baton Rouge at number two. And I know that I've covered a lot of games there covering the home team, but I think for a lot of SEC fans, that's their number one. It's got to be in anybody's top two. And kind of like staying in Atlanta and going to Athens, so many people stay in New Orleans and then come over to Baton Rouge. It is a built-in, just tremendous 2 or 3 day trip for anybody throughout the SEC. So I would go Athens one, Baton Rouge two. I'm going to tell you Knoxville three. And the Vol Navy is no joke. When you get to tailgate on the river, I'm a huge fan of it. You go down to Calhoun's, have yourself some fun. Yes, it's an extremely hilly town. Yes, a lot of people consider it a concrete palace. I like my trips there. Shay, I'm going to stay in the Volunteer State and give you Nashville at number four. The city is so cool that it overcomes so many of the deficiencies that you've got, you know, with the football team. And finally, at number five, I'm going to go to your hometown state, or your home state, I should say. Give me Oxford. And I would like to watch a football game more at Bryant-Denny. I'd like to watch a football game more at Jordan-Hare. But I don't like staying in Tuscaloosa, Auburn, or even surrounding towns like Montgomery, Opelika. I just don't want that. But I do like staying in Oxford. Always have a fun time down at the square area. Tailgating, obviously, at the Grove, something that you got to experience. So I'll go Athens, Baton Rouge, Knoxville, Nashville, Oxford.
Love the list. I'll add the only SEC place I've never been is Columbia, South Carolina. I'm curious if that would make my list if I win.
It would not. It is the hottest place that you'll ever watch a football game. It will not crack your top five.
All right, fair enough. Okay, let's talk a little football. And this is what everyone's talking about right now. And let's just cut to the chase. Joe Burrow, okay, he's played 16 games, 13 a year ago, 3 this year. But he's only been on the team for 16 games. So I think it's not like he was on it for 2 or 3 years and waited his turn and then played. So if you've only been on the team 16 games, is it still okay for us to put you in the debate of he might be the best quarterback that's ever played at LSU?
Yeah, that's premature. Now, he's got an opportunity over these last 9-plus games to change that narrative, but I don't know that you just come in and leapfrog Burt Jones, who was phenomenal at LSU, even better as a pro, and went on to become MVP of the league. I don't know that you come in and immediately leapfrog a 4-year starter in Tommy Hodson that led the program to multiple, you know, appearances in SEC title games and was just so prolific for so long. I think you have to respect what Jamarcus Russell did at the collegiate level. Rohan Davey helping to really kind of do some things after the Magic was brought back to go to the next level. Matt Flynn, Matt Mauk, national championship winners. He can start to enter a conversation with maybe the Mats based on productivity and efficiency. But I would tell you this, Shay. If he ends his 2-year run as a starter by bringing LSU to a national title, maybe even to the brink of it, I think he can crack the top 2 to 4 of all time. But I don't know that it's possible he could become the best, maybe not even the second best, just due to maybe the lack of longevity in that role.
Okay, that's fair. I think we're getting close, though, right? I mean, if he's like you said, we'll see how the year goes, but if they play well, that's one thing. If he's breaking Rohan's single-season record, that's another. I've got him in my at least conversation. I think he deserves that. I think you do too, obviously. Last one. Jefferson, Chase, Marshall. We know those are the dudes right now, and they are productive as hell. But who else? Who, now that we've been through 3 weeks, every receiver's back from a year ago. You've seen a little Trey Palmer. Who do you want? And I said every receiver, not Jonathan Giles. But who do you want to see? Who's left out there that you say, okay, LSU needs to get them involved in the passing game?
You know, you've mentioned Trey Palmer in both segments so far, and he's a guy on my list. Just because of what he could do in the slot, I'd be intrigued there. But I'll give you a few more. I think for me, Shay, both tight ends and both guys that have pass-catching capabilities. You might even say it's their stronger suit. I want to see more Thaddeus Moss, and we keep hearing about Stephon Sullivan. I need to see more of it, and he was occasionally productive during the 2018 season. I don't know about it right now, and I'm curious how quickly he might come along and if he becomes a force at all once this team enters SEC play. But I think both pass-catching tight ends, and I also think that some of the running backs need to step up in that department. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been a regular, not just with playing time, but as a pass-catching back. They might even up his usage there. And as these freshmen come along and start to play more, maybe even usurp some time that would have gone to Leonard Fournette, can they not only pass block, but can they become productive pass catchers? So this may be a little bit of a cheat code here. You asked me about pass catchers. I'm going to take that literally. I'm going to go outside of receivers. I'm going to give you tight ends and running backs, just becoming a more well-rounded, all-around passing attack for Joe Burrow.
I can dig it, and I completely agree. Well, hey, another fun Tuesday, Ben. These fly by. I'm ready for next Tuesday already.
Yeah, mull on that Nick Saban quote, and maybe you'll have something to contribute there next week. It's a doozy. I'm still kind of chewing on it myself.
Maybe that's what the dogs were screaming at. Was that before or after? That was before. I'll get back to you on that one.
We can do some revisionist history. It was after if it needs to be. Shay, this is always fun. Thank you, man.
All right, my man.
Shay Dixon, go247.com. Still pretty remarkable, and I'm going to go ahead and trot that out again for those that may just be tuning in. Ben, what did Saban say? All right, let me remind you. According to Glenn Gilbo, the Daily Advertiser, quote, "If there was one thing professionally I would do over again, it would have been not to leave LSU," end quote. This, of course, on the heels of Saban being named a 2020 Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame inductee. I think it's incredibly well-deserved. I will tell you again what I said atop the program. I don't know that there's been a more important tandem in the history of sports in our state than the time spent by Nick Saban and Dr. Mart Emmert at LSU at the turn of the century. And I don't feel like that's hyperbole. I mean, Peyton Breeze, yeah, that's a pretty good connection. Basically, Huey Long and anybody, okay, that was probably a pretty good connection as well. And there have been very, very important connections to every program, franchise in our great state. But what those two did, elevating LSU football, and then by extension, LSU athletics, and then by extension, LSU the university, and then by extension, LSU the overall brand, I don't think it could be overstated. Nor do I think we'd be having the type of conversations we are now about Miles' opportunities and Ogeron's opportunities had those two not done what they did. So there's my soapbox. It's my show. Hopefully you can deal with that. But I'll tell you, that quote from Saban, while many of us thought it, and while Ruffin Rodriguez hinted at it on this program, Scott Woodward out and out said it in front of a crowd about a month ago in Baton Rouge. It's interesting that the Nictator would say that. It's exactly what you thought you would get, right? Between weeks 3 and 4 of the college football season, Saban regret. What a world we live in. All right, halfway through the hour and the show today. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're coming right back to throw some shade. We're live at Pete's on Johnston and always on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back into Pete's on Johnston, and we'll open up the phone lines for the next half hour. Let us know what you have to say when it comes to LSU, UL, or the Saints. You can react to that interesting quote from Nick Saban that we've shared with you first half of this hour, or anything else that you've heard Shay Dixon say to begin our 5 o'clock hour. Dial us up when ready at 706-0111. I'm telling you, always interesting to get inside of the minds of coaches, the opportunities they have, the ones they take, the ones that they don't. Intriguing. All right, this, not intriguing, but it is important. Astros fans, you're getting ready for the stretch run of the season, the AL playoffs. Stros announced earlier today that pitcher Colin McHugh out for the season. Clint, I'm going to let you react a little bit here. McHugh, for years in this franchise, has bounced around a bit. Starter, bridge reliever, he really has plugged a lot of leaks in the dam. This isn't what you wanted to hear as we get closer to the 2019 playoffs.
It's definitely not what you wanted to hear, but when you just hear everything that he was having to deal with, the fact that he was still feeling pain when he threw, it was just one of those situations where it's going to hurt them a lot, especially once postseason play gets started. I mean, we talk about it all the time. You look at what you have. You've got Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke, and Gerrit Cole. Who else is going to be that fourth or fifth guy? Wade Miley has shown to be very, very hit or miss down that stretch run, and this could be a very detrimental part of whatever I feels like could very well be a World Series run because of the fact you have a big three, but your fourth or fifth guy isn't necessarily there.
Bouncing around a bit. Just went in on the Astros. Let's take a phone call and talk some LSU Tigers aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Craig, thanks for waiting. How are you today?
Good, Ben. How's it going, man? Look, first of all, with the Nick Saban thing, I have no issue with him being in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame. He put LSU back on the map in football for sure. So I have no issue with that. And, you know, I thought for the longest time, if he had to go back and do it all over again, I don't think he'd ever leave LSU, especially for the NFL, you know. And I don't think he'd leave LSU for a lateral move, another college football job. So, I kind of believe that for the longest time, that he kind of regret. He probably would never admit it publicly, but if you sit him down one-on-one in a room, he'd probably tell you, yeah, if he had to do it over again, he'd never leave LSU. And imagine how many national championships LSU would have won if he had stayed.
Craig, to make sure that you understand, he did come out and say that today. That's why it's come back up. Saban himself said earlier today, when this was all announced, he said his only professional regret is he wishes he'd have never left LSU. He did say that publicly.
Yeah, it's just I think about that a lot. How many national titles LSU have in football right now? Because you know he would have won probably at least four or five, I'm guessing, at LSU. But anyway, to go to this game this weekend, I don't think LSU is going to lose the game by no means. But it's kind of a scary game for me because, you know, LSU never plays at 11 a.m. for starters. The one thing, I just hope they don't go into that game sleepwalking. Vanderbilt usually plays everybody close at least for a half, a quarter and a half. And with all these injuries LSU's got, especially on defense, you know, Todd Harris out, Lawrence, I guess, not playing. I don't know if Chasson's playing, but Logan's probably not going to play. It's kind of a scary game. I just hope LSU takes care of business. I mean, and doesn't take Vandy lightly. I mean, I don't care if they win by 5 points. I think they'll win by more than that. But it's just a scary game if you're an LSU fan. How do you feel about this game this weekend, Ben? Thanks a lot.
No, you got it. Craig, I appreciate the call. Here's my problem. Just about every player that you mention is on the defensive side of the football. Again, I don't think they're in any risk of losing the football game, but that's the side where you'd like to see improvement. And you're not going to get your wish, really. Before it starts to get hot and heavy again in October, right? Before the likes of Florida and Auburn invade Tiger Stadium. So it's a weird time to be an LSU fan, right? The offense is prolific. It's moving fast. Some people even saying too fast, put the defense in bad positions. And that just, to me, is hysterical. For the better part of 10 years, all you've wanted is what you're getting. And now you're saying it's happening too fast. But defensively, LSU needs to show some things. I don't have any doubt about the talent, what's been proven so far, but let's see them put it together, right, this season. Because these guys, this cast of characters, hasn't always done it together. I mean, when Caleb Von Chainsaw was starring, Christian Fulton wasn't allowed to play football for LSU, and Derek Stingley was still at Dunham. And some of these other guys, Braden Fajoco was still sitting out a transfer year, right, from Texas Tech. You get my point. The pieces are incredibly talented. And at different points in their LSU careers, they've shown out. But now, it's time to put it together, together at the same time with one another. And you won't get an example of that this weekend against Vandy. Now, that being said, Craig, I think it's the right time to sit out some of these guys while you still kind of can. So will you see big time leaps and bounds taken on defense? I'm not so sure about that. But could it be an occasion where, hey, they show you enough to feel better in the interim? Maybe so. All right, every day around this time, we remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Alex will be the one to put up your shades and awnings while Todd mans the installation of your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center is ready to up your patio game. And all it takes to start, a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
How about a couple of logs to toss on the fire today? First, and this one's a few days old, I just haven't been able to fit it in, but Clint, I thought it was hysterical. By all accounts, T. Boone Pickens, after passing away recently, left in his will $30 to Oklahoma State football coach Mike Gundy so that he can get a haircut at Supercuts. Tremendous. T. Boone Pickens with an awesome bout of shade thrown from beyond the grave. I'll take a moment to throw a little at myself. And, Clint, you didn't catch this one, so I got it past you. Snuck it past the goalie here. I ended hour one by shouting out Charles Peanut Tillman, one of the new members, an inductee in the class of 2020 to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. And in kind of sending him off, I said, yeah, he won a Super Bowl. Except that didn't happen. Those Bears lost to Peyton Manning and the Colts. So my apologies and shade thrown at me. I know you've got a little yourself. I'll let you share with the listeners.
Oh, and of course, it's got to go towards what happened with Monday Night Football and everybody's favorite defensive coordinator, Greg Williams. Earlier in the week, he was talking about OBJ, and he said, Odell who? I guess kind of a reference to him, Jarrez Zeke who type thing. But the Browns actually responded to it on Twitter during the Monday Night Football matchup, especially after that phenomenal touchdown run from Odell Beckham Jr. after that amazing reception, 90-something yards for the score to pretty much put it on ice against the New York Jets. And they want to put in Odell who? With a picture of Odell burning that secondary like you had never seen before.
Yeah, that's just good shade. And that's about all we need today. Three the hard way for a Tuesday.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
And how about this? 42 minutes after 5 o'clock, Rebels Nation starting to invade. Pete's on Johnston. Got a number of players that are here, and so that tells me a couple things. One, hey, they've gotten all the memos. But two, that means that Coach Dane Chiponche is letting the troops go from a Tuesday practice session. So looking forward to visiting with Coach Chiponche, several of these players, some assistant coaches as well. The Rebels have their prep power hour 6 to 7. You've still got time to come out and join them at Pete's on Johnston. Again, the number to beat from last week, how about a head count of 112 players, coaches, cheerleaders, fans from Southside High last week. I think that the Rebels might just give them a run. And we'll be right back in to wrap up our 5 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Inching closer to a full hour, talking Terlings Catholic Rebels football. And yeah, the Rebels starting to roll in. Head coach Dane Chiponche just joined us. We are inside Pete's on Johnston. Terlings Prep Power Hour coming up 6 until 7. But for the next few moments, want to get back on the topic of LSU. Good call in our last segment from Craig. He's not sure that this is a blowout victory, he'll take anything. Right now, he says, he just wants to get by maybe a touch of a trap game and see if the defense, without some key figures, can continue to improve under coordinator Dave Aranda. So let's get a little bit of sound here from Coach O, and I'll share some of my thoughts. Now, one of the things you heard Craig say stinks that Todd Harris is going to be out for the season. And the former Plaquemine player, it's exactly the situation. So she's going to have some things they have to catch up on at safety. Here's Coach O on Todd Harris and the injury.
Yeah, Todd's going to be out for the year, and will not be back with us this year. And hopefully we can use him as a redshirt. No, we will use this year as a redshirt year for him. Unfortunate. It was an unfortunate accident. He just landed on the ground wrong.
And that means what? That life outside of Grant Delpit gets slightly more complicated. Yes, this team has a number of safeties, and they're probably a little deeper there than at corner, right? I mean, after Kelvin Joseph, Manny Netherly put into the transfer portal, I think this team at safety has some more bodies. But they're going to be younger. And it seems like they have been, I guess, gearing up Marcel Brooks more for an edge rusher getting after the quarterback role than necessarily playing back at safety. Does that change now? That time will tell. Because Brooks, I think, may be the slightly skinnier, more athletic version of Jacoby Stevens in this defense. So I don't know how much he can backfill for Harris, but no doubt about it, that's going to be a blow in the secondary for Bill Bush and Corey Raymond. Now, speaking of guys that, well, there have been some questions about, Ed Ingram. Everyone's wanted to know about the old lineman from Texas ever since, well, SEC media days, it feels like, over the summer. Coach O hinted yesterday during his Monday presser, good news might just be coming on that front.
Yeah, we're hearing very positive news. We have nothing official. I expect to know something in the near future, the next couple of days. And when I do hear something official, I'll bet to let you guys know officially.
And so officially, Ed Ogeron said that the better part of 29 or 30 hours ago. And a day and 6 hours in, he doesn't have anything new. But again, he said in the next couple of days. So you might just learn tomorrow, possibly Thursday. If LSU could get back Ed Ingram along that offensive line, wow. Catching up to game speed might be an issue for a touch, but man, that would suddenly make this an incredibly formidable and tough group up front for Coach Craig. All right, let's get to the latest from Coach Ed Ogeron. Already updates on Todd Harris out for the year. Ed Ingram, good news could be coming. Here he tells you he likes the position of this team at 3-0.
It's always good to be able to win and look at the things that you must improve on. And the guys see it. We had some experienced guys up front that didn't play very well. And they know it. I talked to them about it today, so they're going to be hungrier this week. Must improve. Again, the LSU standard of performance is very high. They understand it. I think they see it before I do sometimes, and which is good.
We'll take one more from Ed Ogeron. Again, LSU coming off a ho-hum win, at least at first, over Northwestern State. But 3-0 is 3-0. And the one game you had to have in that stretch, LSU went out and took over Texas in Austin. And on the strength of that win over the Longhorns, Tigers pretty universally a top four team in the country. Up next, the Vanderbilt Commodores. And here, Coach O gives you a scouting report on Vandy.
On offense, they've gone to the spread. They have a big-time running back in Keyshawn Vaughn, a running back. He's probably going to be an NFL player. And also Jared Pinkney, tight end. Those two guys will play in the NFL. And Lipscomb, who's from New Orleans, is a good receiver for them. On defense, they are 4-2-5. They're giving up 36 points per game. Coach Mason's a defensive guy. I know he's had 2 weeks to prepare. I know he's going to have an excellent defensive game plan against us.
We all know, especially the higher level of football you go, it's all about the Jimmies and Joes. That said, just schematically, yeah, Commodores run a 4-2-5. Seemingly, they would have a defense a little more conducive to go up against the spread attack, like LSU's going to bring to Nashville for an 11 a.m. kickoff. What does that tell me? What an opportunity for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, some of these freshmen, to get loose on the ground. I know it's not what LSU hangs their hat on in 2019, but wouldn't it be nice to put on film just a little bit more, maybe ring up a 150, 200-yard-plus game on the ground? We'll see if it happens against that 4-2-5 defensive scheme. And offensively, Vandy likes to spread you out. LSU's got athletes all over the field. Now, some of them defensively we know are going to be hemmed up due to injury, including a number of guys that get after the passer. Some of the defensive linemen, Todd Harris, we just touched on at safety. So this is an important game, as Northwestern State was, in terms of next man up. And it will be more imperative to start with a flourish, or at least not get snowed under, as the Tigers did, trailing 7-3, 15 minutes into their ball game against the Demons of Northwestern State. So start quicker. See who the next men up are. Identify it. Get out to a lead, and then keep some of those guys healthy that you're going to need for a very, very important month of October. Because the goal right now, it's got to be real simple. Get to Bryant-Denny Stadium undefeated. From there, a lot can happen. And as I've been forecasting since August, a lot could possibly happen, even with a loss in Bryant-Denny. I'm not predicting it, but I do think that LSU's got a whole lot of season ahead of them right now. And that win over Texas, it just buys you a leash. I mean, there's no other way to put it. You've got some rope now, and we'll see how much slack is required through the rest of this season. All right, big program today, and we've got some big opportunities for you to continue winning all the time at 103.7 The Game and on our website at 103.7thegame.com. One such opportunity online, you can test your football knowledge with the Acadiana Sports Station. We call it the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. So make sure to get your picks in, your shots up, before week three of the pro football season. Go to the website, 103.7thegame.com, and try to beat the best, or even people like me. It's the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge, and it's only available on the website, 103.7thegame.com. We had a lot of school spirit last week with Southside High, and look, that's worked out pretty well, I think, for the Sharks. They won a big game over Church Point after stopping by Pete's on Johnston. They are now 2-0. And right now, the flock of Rebels that's joined me inside Pete's, ditto for them. 2-0 after wins versus Como at Archbishop Hannon. They've got Opelousas coming up on the road this Friday. We're going to preview that and a whole lot more with Dane Chipanche and the Rebels. Their Prep Power Hour, it's next and live at Pete's on Johnston and only on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now
let's get started.
And welcome back to Pete's on Johnston. I'm Ben Love, and this is the Terling's Rebels Prep Power Hour. Terling's Catholic packing the house. Glad to have him here and live on 103.7 The Game. 2-0 start to the 2019 season. It began with a 35-20 win over Como at home and continued last week. A trip out to Covington, got around a wreck on I-12, and then put it to Archbishop Hannon 49-8. The Rebels will be back in action against Opelousas this Friday night. And we're going to welcome in head coach Dane Chipanche. Coach, a couple years in a row, we've had the chance to do this. Congrats on the hot start.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having us.
So tell me about when the Spartans took a 14-0 lead. Where was this team, and how did it turn around and lead to 35 unanswered?
Yeah, I didn't really see anybody flinch. It was a couple mishaps that led to it. You know, defensively, they did some things. Offensively, I think that we weren't quite adjusting to in the first quarter. The speed of the game was tremendous in the first quarter. So they went down and scored one on us, and then we had a special teams catastrophe. We didn't field a kickoff, and that led to another quick score. But I didn't really see any panic on any of the guys' faces. You know, I thought they really bounced back and kind of kept their poise. Senior quarterback Sammy LeBlanc did a good job of, I think he led by example. He stayed calm, stayed collected, and did a good job of leading us on the field.
Tell me about Samuel LeBlanc. I know he's here with us tonight, but the strides he's taken in his game into his senior season.
Yeah, I think he's a lot more comfortable this year. You know, I think in his own words, he told me the game has slowed down for him a little bit. You know, last year as a junior, his first time starting, we had a hell of a schedule in front of him, and he was swimming in some deep water pretty quick. And I think the game was fast for him last year, coming from a JV season, a very successful JV season. He had as a sophomore, but you know, coming from that JV season into that varsity season as a junior, it takes some getting used to, you know, and a lot of times you don't realize, you know, how big of a jump a 17-year-old can make to being an 18-year-old. And I think the game has slowed down for him a lot. He's seeing things he might have not seen before, and he's seeing open guys, fortunately for us.
And they're pretty talented as well. I know in that opener, at least four receptions, 113 yards and a touchdown for Julian Guy. Of course, Noah Fontenot, the tight end, a big part of your passing game. Has this offense felt different than the last couple of years for the Rebels?
Yeah, I think we got more weapons. You know, I think we got more guys who have the ability to separate, more guys who have the ability to beat man-to-man coverage. And it's something that we place a lot of emphasis on in the offseason, because it's kind of been an Achilles heel for us. The last couple of years, we've been consistent running the football, and I think we've been really successful running the football. But when teams wanted to load the box and play man-to-man, that's kind of been an issue for us. So, you know, and a lot of that has been play design, which is my job. So I tried to get better as far as giving us more options to beat those pressure looks and those man-to-man defenses, and try to put as much speed and skill on the field as we can to not let people hone in on one guy.
Dane Chaponche, head coach of the Turlings Catholic Rebels, joining us live from Pete's on Johnston. Always a tough non-district schedule for your team, but how did this summer progress, and did that give you a feeling, hey, this could be a special year for us?
Well, you know, you do a lot of 7-on-7 in the summers, and I think sometimes that stuff can be misleading. What you really want to see is how your team responds when you put the pads on. And whenever August started, this group of guys went harder at each other than any group that we've had. It got competitive. It got chippy. We even had a fight, a Catholic school fight, and at practice one day. And, you know, you never want guys to get out of control, but it's good to see that passion and that fire, especially in the senior group. You know, it's always offense versus defense, and it gets monotonous in the month of August because you're going against each other day after day. And so when it finally came time to play somebody else in the scrimmage and then in the jamboree, I think that passion and that fire showed.
A Catholic school fight that differs from the other ones, right?
Well, they don't really tend to last quite as long and don't get as bloody, but it was a fight. It was a fight.
Give me a little bit on your defense. I know you're typical on the offensive side of the ball, but after giving up those 14 points early to Como, almost right, locked down from there, and a near shutout on the road against Archbishop Hannon, who's been leading the charge?
Well, I think it starts with our linebacking group. You know, Bradley Boudreaux is a second-year starter. He has a lot of experience. You know, he had a really good year last year as a junior, and then I think he's gotten stronger and faster. And just that year of experience helps guys so much on that side of the ball with their instincts and the different looks that offenses can give you. Another guy, R.J. Tripp, that actually played defensive end as a junior. We moved him in the middle to play Mike linebacker as a senior, and that's turned out great for us, you know. And we had a few guys in that linebacking core that were looking forward to their senior year. And when we made that move with R.J., man, the unselfishness of this group really came through. Grant Poole was a kid that we had that was a really good Mike linebacker as a junior. And we had a little bit of a philosophical change on defense. We needed a linebacker in the middle that could really cover the pass and cover some ground. And Grant's more of an A-gap plugger. He's a weight room All-American. He's a great kid. And so we talked to him about moving down low and playing some defensive tackle, and he hasn't missed a beat. He's been playing great for us at defensive tackle. We think he's one of our best 11 guys, and you know that's kind of been a theme with this senior class. They've adapted and they've done whatever they've been coached to do. You know, we've asked them to do different things. We've asked them to switch position. We've asked them to just help us get the best product on the field, and they've bought in completely. It's been fun.
What can you tell me through your film study and preparation early this week about your opponent Friday, a trip on the road to Opelousas?
Yeah, OHS, typical Opelousas team, a ton of speed on the field, really good athletes. Coach Guillory, he has a lot of really unorthodox formations offensively. He likes to overload one side of the football. He'll put all five skill guys on one side of the football and direct snap it. You know, they run a lot of quarterback sweeps. They do a great job of getting speed in space. And like I said, a lot of unorthodox formations that really, really cause you to spend time on the whiteboard trying to figure out just how to line up to them. And I think that's by design. You know, he wants to try to get our defense thinking instead of just reacting. So we're going to try to keep it simple defensively and react and tackle. You know, that's the name of the game. And just try to match their guys in space is going to be a challenge.
I know you're always going to take it one week at a time. The following week is Notre Dame
right.
Coming to your field. Why has that game been so important to keep on the schedule over the years?
Well, it's a tradition. You know, unfortunately for us, it's been too much of a one-sided deal in recent past. You know, my senior year we beat them, and that was in 2001. And then I think we've beaten them maybe three or four times since then. So we need to figure out some things. And, look, admittedly so, Coach Cook is ahead of the game. You know, he's been doing this since before I was born. And, you know, I've got some catching up to do X and O-wise. But I think we made some progress last year. You know, we were able to play those guys really tough. But they're just a really tough physical group, and they pose a lot of problems on both sides of the football schematically.
Finishing up with Dane Chiponce. We're live at Pete's on Johnston. I think I've told you this before. You know I think you've got the best field, definitely the best press box in the stadium set up in the area. How much of an advantage is that for you and the team?
You know, the first week it was a huge advantage. We challenged our student body and our parents and our fans to really come out and make a statement in week one, you know, what type of atmosphere, what type of game atmosphere we can get. And they didn't disappoint. It was, you know, whenever we started coming back, we got down 14-0. It was kind of quiet. But whenever that comeback started and we started gaining momentum, it was loud. It was real loud. And I think it had a lot to do with creating that environment, that momentum that we needed to kind of get over the hump in that game.
I've been interested in this. I know that Southside is going to be playing their home games and already has started this
right.
year at your home field. Does that mean anything to you? I mean, is it something you got to kind of get in there and take care of things and get ready for the next week when they do play?
Yeah, no, I mean, me personally, I'm lucky. I have a great administration that supports me, and they do everything in their power to make it my job just to coach the kids. And so I'm extremely lucky in that aspect. We got a lot of people in the front office that have taken on an extra workload, definitely, with Southside playing their home games at our place. But I think the philosophy that our principal, Mr. Mike Boyer, and our athletic director, Sonny Chiponce, have always had, you know, we built the stadium in 2010, 2011. I think it finished. We built it for kids to play there. You know, and it's not just Turling's kids. We're about kids being able to participate in high school athletics at a quality venue. And anytime we can offer that to outside people, we try to do that.
Love it. Coach, congrats on the 2-0 start. I know it's at Opelousas versus Notre Dame at Breaux Bridge, and then he gets right into that 5-4A schedule. Best of luck. We'll be catching up soon.
Appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for having us, buddy.
Dane Chiponce. We'll get to more from the Rebels on the other side of this break. Do not go anywhere. It's Turling's Catholics Prep Power Hour live at Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. It's still a party at Pete's, and I've been told it's a party in the backfield. The Turling's Catholic Rebels are with us. It's their prep power hour, and we're joined now by defensive line coach Bart Vitt. Coach, I think they just taking your line and sprinting with it, brother.
Yeah, it's a great group of guys. Great guys to be around.
So speaking of great guys, or at least the guy that we both know, Blaine Viator, he's with me calling Karen Crow games every Friday night.
Yeah.
You tell me that he sings country music?
Oh, he's a great Luke Combs guy. He's a great singer.
Does he think he's great, or is he legitimately great?
He's in between, probably somewhere in between.
We'll have to make fun of him later. And, of course, on live radio, and then over the loudspeaker at Pete's on Johnston. This defense, what they've done so far in the season, mm-hmm. I guess give me your synopsis of where they've been the best.
Like Coach said a few minutes ago, it really starts with allowing our linebackers to play sideline to sideline. And my group in particular, I think, has done a great job of being unselfish and allowing them to do that by, you know, getting hands on O-linemen and preventing them from climbing up to the linebackers. You know, and then on the back end, they're able to come in, our safeties and our corners, to clean things up. So it's a combined effort between, you know, all the guys on defense. So I think it's really a unified effort on our part.
I know Coach Chaponche in this program brought you over from Cecilia. Give me your overview of this program as you came into it. I mean, just what you immediately felt.
It just above expectations. I mean, I came in, you know, obviously knowing the Terlings Catholic, you know, program from being at Cecilia for so long. Then getting to know Coach Dane and, you know, in our time together at Cecilia. And then when he called me up and said he had a spot and wanted me to join the staff, you know, it was kind of a going in between of, you know, staying at where I was from or going to try something new. And probably one of the best decisions I've made. You know, I've been really, really happy with it, you know, on a football standpoint, and then the staff there and the other people around have just, you know, taken me in and made me feel like I'm, you know, I've been a part of it for way longer than these short 2 years that I've been here.
Coach, take me back to the opener against Como. I think everybody in the area understands there's a lot of talent there. Offensively, mm-hmm. They know what they're doing under Doug Dotson. So how did you guys answer that challenge, especially after settling down after a slow start?
Just we told the kids before the game, you know, a typical high school football game. You know, they're going to throw blows, and, you know, we just got to be able to keep getting up. And our kids responded to that. They just kept getting up. You know, even after the 14-0 lead by Como, we were able to stay in it, tied up right before the half. And then once that happened, you know, we kind of knew at halftime that we had a shot to really to make a move in the second half. And then, you know, defense, offense, you know, all facets of the game stepped up, special teams, and we were able to pull it out in the second half.
What have you seen on film so far from that Opelousas offense, the challenges that they'll provide your guys?
Just a lot of different formations, you know, kind of they going into the game not knowing exactly, you know, what they're going to line up in, you know, because they've shown a couple of different things. It's going to force our guys to really focus on their keys. And you know, the main thing about defense is being able to align, you know, to whatever they present you with. And our guys have been responding to that this week, you know, just with our alignment and assignment, you know, being keying on that.
Terlings D-line coach Bart Vitt, our guest. We're still live at Pete's on Johnston. Everybody familiar with Thomas Perry, who came through this program last year. You had to work against him with your guys in practice all the time. But there still are a lot of road graders, certainly, on this Terlings O-line. What kind of a challenge is that in practice?
You know, it's a great, you know, go-between the offensive line and defensive line. You know, their guys, you know, it was kind of like it's the reversal of last year. You know, the offensive line last year was a little older and more experienced, you know, so we kind of learned from them. And this year is kind of the reversal of that. We've got a little bit more experience on the D-line. So, you know, the O-line is kind of, you know, getting, you know, to know and getting experience by going against us each and every day. But it's just a great, you know, atmosphere to be able to go back and forth with one another. And you know, the old cliche of iron sharpening iron, you know, is kind of what happens between our two lineman groups.
And, of course, you had to prepare your guys in practice to go up against Sammy LeBlanc. I'll ask you what I asked Coach Chaponche. I guess where he maybe is the most dangerous and how difficult it is to corral him on defense.
Man, he spins it really well. You know, he throws a really good ball. He fits it into tight windows. He really makes our coverage work, you know, to stop our own offense in practice. And it makes us better by doing that. And I really think his leadership role has increased a lot. And he's taken on that role really well and been, you know, pushing the other guys on the team to step up their game also, you know. And then our leadership on the defensive side, really, you know, Bradley Bujo, RJ Tripp, you know, guys like that have, you know, stepped up and just gotten our other guys to push their game up also.
Your Rebels still with four non-district games left. It's going to be Opelousas, Notre Dame, Bro Bridge, three in a row coming up as we speak, and then at St. Martinville on November the 1st. But in between, it's the guys you're used to, right, in District 5-4A. Give me an early look at that district, and again, always difficult this year, no real exception.
No, none at all. Karen Crow and Westgate, you know, the athleticism they put out on the field is just unbelievable. And then, typical STM team, they're going to be explosive offensively and sound defensively. And Northside's always going to present, trouble for anyone, with their athleticism. And we have our work definitely cut out for us, but like we tell the guys, we got to take it one at a time. We want to get to the district season, but we got to get through this little road, three games in a row before we can get to that and start worrying about them.
Last year, your first season with the Rebels, what was the first, not just game experience, but game week like leading up to STM? I've heard it could be a lot of fun, that it could be a lot of things in general.
Having, graduated from Cecilia and been a part of the Bro Bridge Cecilia rivalry, they call it the Civil War. I kind of had an understanding of, rivalries in high school football, but this one's, it's unique in itself, and it's a special type of rivalry, and it was everything that it was made out to be, that I was told about, and I'm looking forward to my second experience with it also, and just hoping that we do the things well enough to where we can come out on top this time.
And tell me about the fan base right now. And look, we do have somebody that basically is almost stopwatching this thing. We're over 100 players, coaches, fans that are packed in here to Pete. So tell me about the fans that support the Rebels.
Fans are great. Fans are great. They come out and, support us no matter where, no matter what. Can't ask for a better fan base. And, being an outsider, being, from somewhere else, they were really accepting.
I think they heard you.
Yeah. They love us and we love them. So it's a great, great, back and forth.
And I'll get you to kind of expound on what Coach Chaponche said. The energy in the building when the comeback started against Como. Describe it.
You just felt it. We knew we weren't out of it. We didn't flinch. We kept getting up after they threw a couple of blows. And once we gave, the crowd a little something, a chance to get back into the game since the start, they came in full force and, our kids just fed off of it. And it was just a wave, once we got it rolling that, we were able to get that score right before half to tie it up. And we just knew at halftime. And when we came out in the second half, they were louder than ever, and they really responded.
Typically, for the second half hour of our prep power hour, we bring on nothing but the players. Is this a good idea or a bad idea on my part?
I think it's going to be a good idea. you always kind of hold your breath with some of them, but, I think it's a great idea. We got some great guys, I think they'll give some great insight into what goes on. Hopefully, they don't give away too much. But it's always fun to hear what they have to say.
I always ask them what the worst punishment that they have is, right, when they do something wrong in the weight room, on the field. Could you guess what that's going to be?
Oh, I know without a doubt. It's boards.
Okay.
I think I heard it mentioned last week on your show.
Southside said the same. I don't know if a shark board is the same thing as a rebel board. I'm guessing it is. I don't know.
Coach Andrews' boards might be a little bit different.
I like it. So we're going to find out here shortly. Coach Bart Vitt, a pleasure. Good luck the rest of the
season,
man.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
The Rebels here. They're getting loud. They're clapping, and they are 2-0. We do appreciate in order so far. Dane Chaponche, head coach, and then D-line coach Bart Vitt, his second season with the program after coming over from Cecilia. It's a great look at what it's like to help lead these Rebels. Coach them up in practice, in-game scenarios. And they're getting ready, of course, for a trip over to Opelousas this Friday night. Again, for those listening, it'll be Notre Dame after that at home at Bro Bridge to begin October. And then you begin district play. Two straight at home. Karen Crow, October 11th. Westgate, October 18th at St. Thomas More. Rivalry game on October 25th. You begin November at St. Martinville and finally at Northside to end the regular season. And then, of course, it will be the playoffs for these Terlings Catholic Rebels. We'll be right back in. Time to talk to the players. You are listening to the Rebels Prep Power Hour live from Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
And here we go, right back into Pete's on Johnston. This is the Prep Power Hour for the Terlings Catholic Rebels. A competitive group, not just on the field, 2-0 so far in the season. They want to break the Southside record from last week. I am told that they are two people short right now. So call a friend to call a friend if they show. That'll be the high number so far. In 3 years of doing this, and it's my pleasure now to bring on a couple of the players, some seniors, one on either side of the football, leading the Rebels. We're going to start off with quarterback Sammy LeBlanc. We're also joined by outside linebacker Von Dwan. Dude, you might have the only name in the house better than mine right now, dude. I love that. Sammy, give me your rundown so far this season, a 2-0 start. How have you done it?
Oh, well, a lot of help from my teammates. My offensive line, I haven't got sacked yet this year. Julian Guy, Devin Chavis, Coleman Bond, and Noah Fontenot bailing me out a lot. I mean, it's been easy with them throwing it to them, so it's all on them and the O-line.
How have you seen the offense change from your junior year to now when they obviously they expect more from you, but they also give you more responsibility?
Well, I think it's night and day from the receiving core from last year to this year. This year we get open, make plays in open space, and catch everything, so that's easy to throw to. Last year we kind of had some problems, I think, in our receiving core. We had a lot of injuries. So, yes, sir.
Von, on the defensive side, your coaches say it's all about the second level of defenders being freed up to make plays. What's it like from your shoes?
I don't know. I guess it's pretty cool making tackle during games, you know. I mean, I didn't really get to start last year, but this year I got to. And then I get to play for my boys, so that's pretty nice.
I guess give me your favorite moment so far this season of what this defense has been able to accomplish.
Probably in the first quarter of Como, it was 14-0, and then everybody's like, oh, no, you know, they could have kind of scored a lot already. And then we shut them out for three more quarters, so I think that's a pretty big achievement.
We'll go back now to Sammy LeBlanc. This offense has had its moments. You mentioned some of the guys that are helping you catching the football. Tell me about that running game.
Yeah, I mean, Larkin Spring, our running back, is a shifty guy. It's really hard to tackle him. He has second-level speed, and once he gets past, no one's going to catch him. And Tyra Gary, he's a sophomore. He's a power runner. He runs with his pads down. He's a good runner. And we've had some help from other seniors like Tyler Brinkman and Will Terrio picking up the load late.
Is boards the worst punishment that you have? Your coach thought it might be. Is that true?
Absolutely, 100%. I didn't have any last year, so I figured I'd make it tough on myself. Every time I throw an interception or in practice or in a game, I have to do a board, so now I've done a few.
Von, for fans that are here, for those that are listening over the air, what is a board?
A board? Okay, basically you get a 2x4, and you put it on the ground, and you just pretty much just slide it across the field. And you got to go across the field and then back.
Okay, so we're not talking lengthwise, but it's widthwise,
down
and back.
Down and back.
So that's like 104 yards?
That's just one board, yeah, pretty much.
How long might that take you?
For me?
Yeah, for you and then maybe an O-lineman, sure.
For me, it probably takes like a minute, and the O-lineman probably takes like 3 minutes.
This is always one of my favorite things to discuss. We like to figure out who is the most fill-in-the-blank on the team. So I think I asked one of you guys this last year, one of your teammates maybe, who's the most prolific eater on this Terlings team?
Jacob Manuel. I watched Jacob Manuel. He could eat.
Coach said he's eating right now. How many Little Pete's burgers could Jacob put down if money were on the line?
About as many as they could cook, probably.
I like that. All right, who's the fastest player on the Rebels team?
Fastest? Probably, yeah, Klein Peter, yeah. He's pretty fast.
Oh, I don't know if it's universal. Sammy, you agree with that?
I'd say it's a tie. Connor Klein, Peter, and Paxton Martin, both cornerbacks.
Okay. Not popular, but you're telling the truth. I can tell that you mean it. All right, we'll go now to the strongest Rebel.
I'd probably say it's a tie. Three-way tie. Grant Poole, Christian Booty, and RJ Tripp. I'd say so.
Vaughn, I'm going to go to you next. I'll let you start. This was my favorite with Southside last week. Who's the smartest player on Turling's team?
Smartest? I have to say Nardog. He's pretty smart. David Bernard.
You guys got a Nardog on the team?
Oh, yeah. That's
What grade is he in?
He's a senior.
Okay. Not the Nard puppy. He's full-on Nardog. All right. I'm good with that. I like that. And now he's got a shout-out on radio live at Pete's. Sammy, give me a little bit of your expectations for this Opelousas game, what you guys have to do on offense to get a win.
I think we're going to have to create space. They like to go man-to-man across the board, so just getting open, making space. I feel like we could throw it all day on them. Picking up blitzes, because if they're man-to-man, they're going to blitz a lot on us. So I think just picking all that up, I think we're going to have a good game.
Same for your side of the football. What do you have to do against that offense, Vaughn?
Well, they line up in different formations, so I think if we have our alignment, it's pretty good. And then if we do our job, I think we'll be fine.
The first time that each of you went out at your home stadium in front of that crowd and you knew that you were going to play a lot that night, what was it like?
Oh, it was crazy. I don't really remember it that well because the adrenaline was pumping. So it's kind of a blur to me, but I remember being fired up, the student section going crazy, the moms, the dads going crazy. It was awesome.
How about you, Vaughn?
Well, it was different for me because Sammy started last year and I started this year. So, like, it was a little bit – had a little bit more feeling for me. So it was nice to see the crowd getting wild.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. Did I read correctly? It might have been a quote from you in the paper, Sammy. Was Como senior night
to begin
the season?
It was.
What was that like?
I don't know. It was different because usually that first game you warm up, you stretch, you get your little, team period, and then you go to the grotto, pray, and then you come right out. We had a break in between and had to go take pictures and stuff with our family. So it was different. It took a little hypeness out of us, I'd say. So I think that could be a big reason why we went down so early. And then once we settled in our groove, it was done.
What was it like on your side of the football once things did settle down, going up against the talented Como offense?
We were a little bit slow in the first quarter, so that happened. And then, you know, we played pretty good after that.
Rebels off to a 2-0 start. These seniors, a big reason why. Von Dwan, senior outside linebacker. Sammy LeBlanc pulling the trigger at quarterback. Guys, a lot of fun today. You've given your superlatives to your teammates. Hopefully they agree. You probably don't care if they do.
Not at all. They can think what they want.
Good luck, guys, the rest of the season. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, sir.
A big round of applause, exactly as it should be. We're going to shut it down one final time after this break. We're going to bring on two more players. Yeah, we'll let them decide amongst themselves. We'll vote two back onto the island. This is the Turling's Catholic Rebels Prep Power Hour, and we'll be back one more time live to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back into Pete's on Johnston one final time. And this place just came unglued. The Turtling Scatholic Rebels finishing up their prep power hour on 1037 The Game. I got a few more players to join me. And they can help explain what just went down. A couple of senior inside linebackers, R.J. Tripp, Bradley Boudreau, good enough to sit in with me at Pete's. Yeah, they're getting the love from the fans. Guys, good to have you both here. How are you tonight?
I'm good.
All right, you're going to have to help me here. Who is number seven?
That is our three-year starting kicker, Ian Judice.
Ian Judice, yes, sir.
There we go. Try not to blast everybody with the sound there. All right, so number seven, Ian Judice. The 113th person to join us. You guys just beat Southside. That's why it's crazy.
Oh, Lord. Hold up. Am I doing this right?
There you go.
I got it. I'm good now.
So, RJ, how about the record? This place is excited about it.
I'm glad we broke the record, you know. We're really, really competitive, and I like breaking records, so it's really good. Yeah, I'm breaking somebody's eardrum.
That's okay. Hey, we got it with the other seniors that were here. We'll figure it out with you guys. I don't have any doubt. And, Bradley, give me a little bit of insight what this summer was like as the defense was getting ready for the season.
You know, we really went into the summer with a different attitude than last year. We're really going to work hard and
work our butts off to get as fast and as strong as we could be. And we had a new strength coach this year. His name's Andrew Hebert, Coach Andrew. He's also our linebacker coach, and he came in and kind of set the tone for the summer and got us going in a different direction.
I'll ask you the same question, RJ. Give me, I guess, some of your thoughts on the first two games. The Rebels start off 2-0.
I'm really proud of us because the first game, first game of the season with an almost brand new team, brand new starting lineups on both sides of the ball. And we faced adversity, from the get-go, from the first whistle, we faced a lot of adversity. And I'm just really proud of all of our guys who, stuck it in there and changed the whole game around and got the dub. And, the second game, we heard a lot of people was talking about how, Archbishop Hannon had 11 wins last year and how we only had like 4 wins last year and how we were, not going to do well against them. And we ended up winning 49-8 or something like that. And, so I'm really proud. I think we got a really, really good squad. We're going to do a lot of special things this year.
We'll go RJ first, then Bradley. How does this year's team feel different than last year's?
A lot of more competitive guys, a lot of more, seniors who, pour their all into the game, blood, sweat, and tears, who really care about it a lot. And I feel like this year's team is closer. We take a lot of more responsibility as seniors and leading the team this year. And, we have a lot of guys who are willing to do whatever it takes to win the game. No selfishness. Everybody's a team player. Dub comes first. So,
Bradley, same thing.
Yes, sir. This year it was almost split. We had offense and defense, and it was kind of split both ways. And if one thing happened, it was blame game. Everybody played blame game. But this year, we're together as a whole team, and everybody's working together to really come out on top. And that's really our goal, is just win as many games as possible and win it together, be a whole team as opposed to two separate.
I know it's always one game at a time, but I'd love your takes on what the Terlings-STM rivalry is like. You first, Bradley.
I'll go. Yeah, it's been going on for a while, and they've had us for the last couple of years. And, this year we're really confident. We think we got a good shot at taking it home this year. We're playing at their place, kind of bummed out because we played over there last year. So, but it's all good. We're going to go over there, we're going to steal one, and shock some people.
RJ?
Man, it's like surreal out there on the field, seeing, the whole city of Lafayette basically, just lined up around the fences and the stands are packed and everybody is hype and it's like a cross-city rivalry. So, like, when you're out there, it feels like, like a Super Bowl type environment almost. It's like adrenaline's pumping. It's like nothing you've ever experienced. It's really important to us. It's important to them. So it's always good whenever two teams want the win equally as bad and just go out there and battle it out.
I loved hearing your teammates talk about everybody else. Now you get to talk about your coaches a little bit. Who's the loudest Terlings coach?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Coach Robbie Reshaw. O-line coach.
O-line coach, yes, sir. Most loud, for sure. Definitely.
And so if Coach Vitt always talks about a party in the backfield, any other catchphrases from your coaches? I know you got some. Things they just say over and over again.
I don't really know.
Dominate. Our linebacker coach loves to say dominate.
Dominate.
Our defensive coordinator, Coach Brad, loves to say tick, tick, boom. That's his main catchphrase.
We don't know much about the offensive coaches. They're a little trickery, but, Coach Robbie's definitely loud. Coach Mason's got a couple. Running back coach. Got to get your mind right.
Coach Dan has a couple, but I don't think I should repeat them.
Oh, sure.
We're going to keep those to ourselves.
Yeah.
I'll be off here in about 5 minutes. We can do that. Maybe not on the air.
right.
Yeah.
Cool. Loudest player in the defensive huddle?
Jacob Manuel,
for sure.
Jacob's definitely the loudest.
That guy
he's got
always
a few screws missing, but it's all good.
He's always hype, man. I remember this dude wasn't even playing in the Jamboree, and he came out with a face full of eye black, wristbands, jumping up around, more hype than us, getting off the bus, cutting backflips, punching people in the chest, just hype. You weren't even playing. Dude's just always hype, man.
Scary sometimes.
Scary, yeah. It's like, can I be like you? How are you always hype? It's kind of weird. But, it gets us going, and he's a spark plug for sure.
Biggest trash talker as well, or is that somebody else?
Samuel LeBlanc, Larkin Spring, them dudes love to talk trash.
Paxton Martin, trash talker.
Paxton Martin by far is the biggest trash talker.
The biggest one.
maybe in our district.
He does it to us, does it to everybody, does it to other teams. No matter who you are, he's going to give you something.
Yeah, the practice, a game, a scrimmage, you know, just sit in the locker room. Dude's mouth is running.
Every
man.
Now and then in class, I'll give you a little something to see.
Dude, it doesn't matter where you're at. Paxton wants to get under your skin, he's going to find a way.
But it's competitive, so we like it.
We like it.
So a lot of times you get through fall camp, and the first O is happy to not be going against the first D, vice versa. Was it like that for y'all, or did you kind of miss some of that?
Well, defense missed it. I'm not sure the offense did, though. You know, they kind of got tired of us, you know, whipping their tail every damn practice. You know, look at it. You know, you know, I got to get under my quarterback's skin. I got to get under Sammy's skin, and it's probably the funniest thing. I mean, we clown him because Coach Dane always says last play, and then we end up tackling him behind the line, and then he says last play again. And that goes on for about 10 more plays until the offense gets some yards. But, you know, it's all good. It's all good.
This is kind of genius on y'all's part, by the way. You know that nobody else is going to get to speak for themselves. You're the last two, so you kind of get the final word.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's easier.
We beat him in fall camp, that's for sure.
It's easier to get the final word whenever you're dominating. So.
I guess I'd ask you one more before we let you go. We're joined now by Bradley Boudreau, RJ Tripp, a couple of senior inside linebackers. How do you take the next step going into district play, into the playoffs? I know you always take it one at a time and divide things, but what you've learned so far in this program, how do you keep it advancing?
You know, we really got to stay focused and really work on the fundamentals. Fundamentals get you a long way, the little things. If we can stay focused, work hard in the weight room to get stronger, bigger, faster. That'll give us an edge over most teams. So I think if we just practice hard, work out hard, and focus on the little things, we can go a long way.
To me, it's a hard work, discipline, and wanting to get the W over just individual success. Because hard work beats talent. When talent doesn't work hard, I truly believe that. You know, we've already won a game, so we was outmatched talent wise, but we had them on discipline, and we wanted them more. So I feel like if we take it week by week and just keep the same energy and, just keep our eyes on the goal, I feel like we'll be just fine. Honestly. So.
And the competitive juices, they've been flowing here tonight.
Oh, man. Yes, sir.
Lucky
yes,
number 113. Again, that's Ian Judy's.
That's right. Judy's. Star kicker, baby.
Man.
Don't miss.
Guys, this is fun. Good luck again this week, the rest of your season. Look forward to seeing you down the road.
Yes, Thank you. Appreciate you.
And they started off kind of blowing eardrums, then they blew minds and told you just what the defense did to the offense. This has been a lot of fun. I want to thank everyone who has joined us here, especially that stepped up to the mic. Head coach Dane Chipace, D-line coach Bart Vitt, and then we've had a quartet of seniors here recently. Do want to thank them all. Rebels off to a 2-0 start. Again, the rest of their schedule at Opelousas versus Notre Dame at Bro Bridge. That rounds out most of non-district play. You'll get Cairncrow, Westgate at home in October to get into 5-4A action at SDM. Rivalry game on October the 25th at St. Martinville. Final non-district contest November 1 and at Northside on November the 8th. The Rebels have, they've set a new benchmark tonight and a new standard. 113 people. Give it up for yourselves. And now it's told 117. So the Rebels victorious yet again at Pete's. Sorry, Southside. We'll be right back at it next week, but we got to thank Turlings again, and good luck against Opelousas. For the famous Clint D, back in the studio, my name is Ben Love, and you've been listening to Bumper Sports with the Turlings Prep Power Hour on 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. At Roofing, 237-7663.